Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Jackie Cation here. You're listening to The Dork Forest. You know the websites, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com, if you like a determiner. JackieCation.com has everything. Both of my podcasts, all of the stand-up stuff, the new album, links to YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all the things. But so, I think, does dorkforest.com, where you can look at old videos of different shows. Anyway, if you want to support the show, tell people about the show, review it on iTunes, thumbs it up on Pandora or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, I appreciate that. You can donate. You can donate monthly. PayPal lets you do that. You can also do my Venmo if you like. It's at Jackie Cation absolutely everywhere. And my email address is jackie@jackiecation.com. And that's what the PayPal is. The PayPal link is on jackiecation.com and dorkforest.com. And go to any of them. Thanks for listening. There's merch. There's stand-up. There's tour guide. You know, you can find out where I'm touring. This is getting long. So let's get into the show. Jackie Cation here in my living room, about to talk to gamer and podcast umbrella purveyor, Ghostlight Media, at Chase. Welcome to the program. There we go. Welcome to the Dork Forest.
Thanks for having me here.
There we go. Chase, you're a gamer, but you also have Ghostlight Media, which has, it's an umbrella for podcasts to exist underneath. Your podcast and everything is sort of, the handle for everything is T is in Tom, Q is in Q, and then the word loudly, L-O-U-D-L-Y.
Yes.
And your name.
All one word, as confusing as possible.
That's it. And it will be in the notes, you guys, so that you will be less confused. Chase, psyched to hear, psyched to talk to you about, because what you do is you do tabletop gaming, but then you make it into podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you also game just organically, loose in the wild.
Yes.
Just as a person wandering the streets.
Unfettered by the bonds of an MP3 file.
Exactly. And here's a dice. That's a dice tower.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
It's a dice tower from the original D&D. And it was just on my porch one day. I still have no idea who gave it to me.
That is either a blessing or a deeply haunted place.
Right.
And there is no middle ground.
There is no middle ground because it is the D&D, you know, I think it's the second edition book or the monster manual book or something. What I know about everything is a little. So now, but I do love to hear about the minutia, and it's weird what sticks. So
yeah.
So you just finished running a big D&D campaign for like 5 years, you said.
Yes.
Same players. Years.
Yep. Same players. Same characters. Everybody survived. I don't know how.
Right?
I was very mean at the end.
At the end, sure. Right?
Because you gotta be. You gotta be pretty mean. But I, you know, what ended up happening in the end was that all of the toys that I gave them at the beginning, you know, at that point, probably, you know, 4 years prior,
right,
they decided to break all of them out at the same time, which is what you want.
Yes,
you
don't. Please.
You don't give players things for them to not use them.
Don't introduce a gun into the plot, Chase, if you don't want them to use it.
Look, it was Chekhov's luck, and they used all of it in the last moments, and it was very cool and fun.
What were some of the things that they pulled out of their little bag of holding?
So, I'm trying to think here of what would be a good one. So I will say this in case somebody decides they want to go back and listen to 5 years worth of podcast. I won't give too much away, but what I will say.
Okay. Say that. And then I'm going to ask a question. Okay.
Sure. So what I ended up doing is very early on, I gave a couple of the players a risky chance. And if they took it, they got a free natural 20 that they could spend at any point.
Okay.
Just a free success.
One, though.
One.
Okay.
One. Use it or lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them broke it out in the last time we sat down to record in what would become the last episode. And it ended up, one of them used it to straight up kill my big bad guy out of nowhere. And I looked at the situation.
I can't believe that they saved it for 5 years. I would have used it almost immediately going, oh, I need this. We're fighting mice.
No, especially with some of the things I threw at them. Like, I was mean multiple times.
Right.
Never unfair. I always like to, you know, I never overstack the odds. Mm-hmm. I like to think I create a fun and tense encounter without it being too unfair. But at the same time, like,
right.
No slouch.
Right. You want everyone to try, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you want everyone to have a real gaming experience.
Right. Well, and fifth edition gives you many very cool things that you can use at many points. I want you to use your toys.
I'm
not
going to
give you the toys and not tell you to use them.
So for the last 5 years, it's been fifth edition because that's when that's right when it came out, I believe, right? Which
So when fifth edition came out, I was in a break in gaming.
Okay.
I live in Northwest Ohio. I went to school here. And I ended up, my wife and I moved down to Virginia for a couple of years. We're both Ohio natives. We wanted to try living somewhere else for a little while. We ended up moving back a couple of years later just so we could be closer to friends and family. But that, you know, three-ish year period of time was when 5th edition came out and also my gaming lapse. I was not playing anything even before then.
It's hard when you move. It's hard when you move because you don't, you got to find new people. Though I do recommend finding your board game or your Magic the Gathering store mm-hmm. in whatever town. If you want to start gaming, start hanging out with those nerds and you will find someone to play with and you won't like everybody. Yeah,
nah.
But
mm-hmm.
you will eventually find real friends, and I recommend
it. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. No, and that is honestly what I should... Were my situation a little better when I was down there, that is absolutely what I would have done.
Yes.
I was working, and I don't mind saying this now, because the company is closed, so it doesn't matter anymore. I was working for a brutal company called Portrait Innovations. It was a portrait studio company. I think it was national, I think everywhere... But California, I want to say.
JCPenney portraits? What are we looking at?
Pretty much the same thing.
Okay.
We frequently got confused for them.
Families,
prom. I did a bunch of Shriners one time. That was pretty neat.
That's fun, actually. Hats.
It really was. The hats are great. I'm actually a Freemason now, so I can get one of those hats if
Ooh,
I want to.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
But
are you allowed to tell me you're a Freemason?
I am.
I'm kidding.
Look, we could do a whole other thing about my opinions about what's going on in Freemasonry, but that is another discussion entirely.
Right. And no, I don't know anything about that. We will do that. Let's do it next year. Okay.
Yeah, sounds good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we did a but when I was down there, I was because I have a base level of competency, I was very quickly promoted to assistant manager,
mm-hmm.
Which meant I had no free time outside of work.
Assistant manager is the hardest gig in the world.
Right. Well, and it's like because I was working eight to sometimes 13 hours a day, then going home and collapsing and then going back and doing it all over the next day. And then on my days off, I had to grocery shop and cook and do all of the things in order to keep a house.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to get new friends and mm-hmm. and build a life around work, except for work. Now, here's my second question about the Tabletop Gaming Podcast that you just finished the 5-year campaign.
Yes.
What's it called?
It's called Another Path.
Thank you. Another Path. That's right.
Another
Path Pod. And then how long are the episodes?
Episodes usually run between 45 minutes and an hour is where I personally like. That's my sweet spot for listening. So that's what I edit to.
That's I love that, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every so often, like for, you know, like the big episodes, we'll stretch those out to an hour and a half. I think our longest episode, you know, now that I'm going to just double check my own website, because I don't remember the last episode of
ghostlightmedia.com, by the way, your own
ghostlightmedia.com is the network site for
is
the actual
Another mm-hmm. Path. What is that website?
That is anotherpathpodcast.com.
Thank you very much.
Yep. And the longest episode that we have by just a couple of seconds is actually the last proper season episode, which is episode 113.
So there's 113 hours at least of this thing, because it might have run over a couple of times. And now here's my next podcasting question, because we're both in the podcast industry. Do you do any editing?
Lots.
Okay.
Lots.
Good to hear it, because tabletop in real life, as we all know, there's a lot of four people staring at their phones and one person thinking and the game master waiting. So, like I've done Nerd Poker, which is a Brian Posehn, Dan Telfer.
I'm very familiar with Nerd Poker.
Yeah. And then I did Stream of Blood with Jared Logan. And those two edit the heck out of it as well. Yes. So I think that there has to be, just to sort of tighten it up.
Absolutely.
How long did you record for?
So normally the way that our workflow goes is that we will record for somewhere in the neighborhood of like 2.5 to 3 hours on kind of the end for a normal episode. And then what we would do is I actually find a midpoint, and then that is two episodes.
Okay.
So that usually gets us through a month.
Oh, nice. Because you'll do twice a month.
Yep.
And
well, we put out every 2 weeks when we're in the middle of a season. Right now, I am taking what I'm going to go ahead and call a well-deserved break. we're actually gearing up to we haven't actually put this publicly yet. So but no, this will be out by that time. So by the time this comes out, we will have recorded the first episode of the next season.
OK. All right. So you have done so for the last 5 years, Another Path has done this fifth edition. What do you think the difference between just being a game master, DM, on in real life versus doing it for entertainment, for publication kind of thing?
It is so much more important that you have your ducks in a row.
Yeah.
Because it is one thing when I'm at my table running my homebrew campaign, and it's like, it's my brother and like most of the people that my wife works in local youth theater sitting around a table. And if I forget an NPC's name, or screw something up, or like flip a god, I can come back next week and be like, hey guys, I borked it. Sorry.
Yeah.
There's only so much you can do about that when you mess it up on the internet.
Right.
And now I will say that I am so incredibly blessed with a wonderful community that has formed around the work that we do.
Right.
Really, honestly, genuinely, like that is the thing that has kept me going, because we're not a huge show. We are not a Nerd Poker. We are not an Adventure Zone. We are a tiny community. But the people who have found us through one show or another, absolutely, like they are the glue that keeps everything going.
That's the Dork Forest. You know, I mean, there's just it's not WTF. It's not other stand-up comics. You know, they're weird niche. And it's I kind of like it. And I'm sure a giant bag of money as a doorstop is quite nice. But it's not the generosity. And it's nice when people come out and they're like, haha. And I like the thing. So, and that's fine. I don't think that there's any, you have to continue to love to do it. When anybody asks about doing a podcast, I'm like, pick something you like, because you're going to bail on it. And then you'll have, you know, like 10 episodes and you're like, well, it's kind of lame. And you can't really get rid of it, right? Once it's on Apple iTunes, it's on there. It's out in the world. So, here's my next game question. When the difference between a homebrew and doing it for publication for audio is, because once you make a plan, much like any battle, it never goes the way you planned.
Correct.
People always choose something else, and sometimes you gotta write on the fly. How has that manifested itself in another path?
I'm trying to think of specific instances, and I think the best way to describe it is actually to dial back all the way to about the midpoint of season one. So we're talking 4 years ago at this point.
Sure.
And I sat down and realized that I had not read a single one of my closing monologues in about 6 months. So I decided I'm just not writing endings anymore. I write the first 2.5 to 3/4 of a game, and then I just stop, because I know at some point these ding-dongs are going to go ahead and do something else.
Right, they're going to take the other tunnel.
Exactly, they're going to choose another path. They're going to do, you know, talk to somebody I wasn't expecting. They're going to make me invent an NPC. They're going to do something that I never in a million years could have ever thought that they would do.
It's one of the coolest things about the tabletop gaming is the storytelling is interactive.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And that's how we all build it to ourselves, you know, when we were in our early 20s. And, you know, I got involved with the group of guys that I play with, by and large. That crew came out of another D&D group that I joined my first summer when I was getting out of college. I was still living here in town. It was me and actually another one of my hosts on the network, Zan. They and I were hanging out with a couple friends, and they're like, hey, we've got a D&D group. We'd like, well, not it, it wasn't D&D, it was a homebrew system. But it's like, we have a tabletop role-playing game group. Would you like to join? And we were both like, yes, immediately, please sign us up. I had played a little bit of 3.5 before I joined up with them, and run a bit of a 4th edition campaign as well. So I was really eager to get back into the player side of the seat again. And I played with that group for, geez, how many years did I live here before I ended up moving away? Probably about 2.5-3 years played with them before I ended up moving. And there is, you know, that was a consistent world. It was different characters, but we were all just kind of continuing to feed into that mythos.
Okay, and how often were you playing? Once a week. Okay.
Yeah.
And you'd play for like 2 to 3 hours.
That one was like closer to 4 to 6 because we were a bunch of 20-year-olds with, you know, retail
all day,
jobs
Saturday
and
yeah.
Yep. Sunday evenings typically.
Okay.
Like it was a 6 to midnight affair. And they were intense. It was a lot.
And that and this was not D&D. This was not the 3.5. This was something like a table like my husband's a game designer, and so he has created a superhero tabletop game. It's called The Hero Instant. Spells heroin right there in the middle.
Ah.
But the Hero Instant, and it's free to play, and you can download character sheets and do whatever you want. Just as a, and he also has a podcast called Ethics and Video Games, because he's a video game designer, and he does it with a philosophy professor. And they talk about there aren't any. So
I was going to say, I bet he's going wild right now because there is some shit going on in the industry.
And has been for the last 30 years. And he's actually, he's had a couple of dodgy interviews where he's asked, so what is your, do you guys have an ethics department? And then he was not called in for a second interview. So, but that's fine. He's contract guy. So he's all right. But the, so ethics and video games and Hero Instant. So, but Hero Instant is not D&D, it's superhero based, and it's not like Champions or anything. But it is all D10s. It's all you roll a pile of 10-sided die. What game were you guys playing?
So it was an entirely homebrew system. It was
Explain what that is. Yeah.
So this guy pretty much did what your husband did. He sat down as like, I would like a fantasy role playing system. I used to play D&D back in like second edition. Here are my gripes with that system. I am going to make a new system.
Right, right.
And so he took the things that he liked, left the things he didn't, and would. This was not an individual who was overly employed, I'll go ahead and say. So he had a lot of time to go ahead and make and remake and remake. And I think we probably went through 2 full new systems a year.
Oh, that's kind of, well, yeah, iteration is, of course, you have to do. And how does it look today? Does he still have it?
No, I don't. So, and this is, I'm going to go ahead and say my fault a little bit. Because when I moved back, I was not super interested in playing in that system anymore, because while I was gone, I didn't have a gaming group to be a part of. I met up with a couple of folks, and I played within their, there is a live action role playing game called Mage that I was a part of for exactly one session. And, you know, it just wasn't the right table for me.
Okay.
And just the beginning and end of it. It's like, I'm all right with LARP. Like, that sounds great. But like, it was just not hitting what I wanted it
to. It's like everything. It's, I mean, exactly. You try, and then as long as you don't go in going, well, Like, if that experience doesn't work out for you, sometimes you just have to try it with a different group of people.
Absolutely.
When I first started playing board games, regular board games with Andy and his friends, I was like, I hate board games. And he was like, that's because you're the youngest of six and you've been playing Family Rules. And people make fun of you if you don't, if you forget to ask for $200, you don't get $200 when you pass go. Because that's the rule. That's the rule. And I'm like, and he's like, we've already weeded those people out of our gaming group.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone would like to win, but they're not jackasses about it.
Right.
So, and so you kind of have to try different gaming groups. And don't, you know, don't take it personal if you don't connect with people. Just try another group. There are several. There's usually a couple of different tabletop. It's everywhere now. It's kind of fun.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
escape rooms. There's different communities where you can meet the nerds and dorks that you need to meet so that you can have friends and you can have stuff to do. And I genuinely recommend that. So you never got back into gaming with this guy?
Not with that. Well, so here's the thing. So while I was down in Virginia and I didn't click with that group, what I did click with was tabletop gaming podcasts like the ones I am producing now.
Okay.
So that is where I started listening to the Dork, not the Dork Force. This is the Dork Force.
Right.
That's where I started listening to Nerd Poker with Brian Posehn and friends. I started listening to The Adventure Zone. Those were the two big ones for me.
Okay.
Never really got into Critical Role. This is kind of one of my weird, not hangups, but, you know, just kind of my opinions. Like, I think that podcasts are a better way to get that media than a 4-hour video. Please give me a you know, 45 minute to like 2-hour podcast.
It just felt too long. Yeah.
Yeah. It was too long. Like, and I have very bad ADHD, which I only recently started getting treated.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, yeah.
Which
almost everybody.
A four-hour
anything. Pete Holmes asked me to be on his podcast and Todd Glass. And I was like, how long is it? I learned after Pete Holmes because Pete Holmes, I didn't ask him. And it was 3 hours. And we're like over an hour and a half in. And I was like, how long are we talking for? And he goes, it's usually another hour or so. And I was like, holy yeah, you did just make it weird. And so Todd Glass asked me to do his, and I genuinely love Todd Glass. I think he's incredibly gifted. I don't want to talk to him and be recorded for 2.5 hours. I don't care. I want everyone, I want to be leaving more. Like, everyone should want more.
Exactly.
So, this is an hour. We're at, let's say, 20 minutes. Very exciting.
Yeah. Thrilling.
So thrilling. So when you came back, you got all the fifth edition stuff.
Exactly. That's the thing. So when I got back, like, very specifically, I was in the Adventure Zone pipeline at that point, and they were playing fifth edition. I was like, I really want to play this because it was because fifth edition is close enough to 3.5 that I was able to very quickly pick it right.
It really
back
is.
Up.
It really is. I played 3.5 for 17 years. I was in a campaign. It was my first experience with Dungeons and Dragons. And we played with three of his buddies who had been playing since they were in their early teens, like 12, 13.
Okay.
And so they were incredibly nice to me and did not start busting my chops and sending me to be killed until easily 10, 12 years into the campaign. So I was a rogue, and Andy doesn't like psionics. So, so he'd taken the psionics out of 3.5 and
easy to do.
Right. And it created this parallel universe where my character came from, but whatever. But essentially I was a rogue archer and shadow dancer anyway. But, at one point, and I had an arch enemy, the Luminous, so at one point I was like, oh man, does anyone want to go chase after these Luminous? And nobody else did. And Kevin Flanagan goes, but that's what a rogue would do. A rogue would go on their own. And I was like, you're right. And Andy's eyes just got really big because he was DMing. And he looked at Kevin. He goes, okay. And then they all had to come and save me because I was almost killed. And then the only other time was we were in the swamps and very early on in the game, and we were fighting baby dragons, and there was aging arrows, and I had picked them up, and I was like, should I hit them with the aging arrows? And that was the response. How was I to know that dragons become more powerful and smarter and get the stats off? They were as one. Andy's eyes, he got like an evil grinchy grin, but the other four gamers just, no, no, do not shoot the dragons with ancient arrows. Too funny.
Look, there's a real sweet spot where you can, where shooting things with aging arrows is always a good idea, and then immediately becomes never a good idea. Oh, aging arrows. That's good.
Yeah, it was pretty great. Yeah, but so there's fun stuff. One of the things that Andy told me, did you play when you were a kid or did you start in your early 20s?
So I grew up in the late 80s to early 90s. So that was right where the D&D is Satanism thing was hitting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you grew up in Ohio.
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. It was expressly forbidden, because I did ask, because I knew, like,
you knew what you were. You knew what you were.
I got a whiff of it from a buddy, and it was like, I went home, I was like, hey, I want to play this Dungeons and Dragons game. My parents were like, absolutely not, no way. And
they were, we don't usually know anything about this, but we heard that the devil is involved.
Correct. And I mean, it was also in the midst of the satanic panic, like that shit was real and weird. Especially looking back on it as an adult, like, who was
what was the satanic panic? What was that?
Well, I mean, that was just like the concept of like, oh, there's Satanism around every corner.
Oh, right,
it was
right.
The 7 o'clock nightly news needed something to blame for all of the nation's ills.
Oh, like, so video games Satanism were
was
causing all the problems. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was very drunk in the late 80s and early 90s, so I didn't.
The
I was already
choice.
I was already an adult. So I missed the you started in your early 20s, like after college,
yes,
when you were on
yeah,
your own
I
and
started,
you're like, I will dabble in Satanism if I want to.
Correct. I officially, like, my first like campaign that I didn't know anything that was going on, because it was a bad table. They weren't teaching me well. They let me play a wizard out the gate. And that's a ridiculously complicated class.
Too soon. Right. Fighter.
But I played that. That was, what was it? I would have been, that was 20. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up moving in with somebody, and her boyfriend was like, hey, I want to run a D&D campaign. I'm like, cool. I barely learned anything last time.
Yeah.
So I made a rogue that time. That was
nice.
Much easier. A rogue inquisitive changeling.
Okay.
Because it was the Eberron campaign setting, and that was a lot of fun. I have
my
a lot of
my 17 years took
it.
Part in Eberron. It was all Eberron.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was changeling, rogue, inquisitive, Sherlock Holmes, but like real easy for disguising.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then I joined up with this other group that I was talking about, and jumping all the way back. So when I moved back, I brought with me like, hey, I want to play 5th edition. And there was enough interest in the group that also wanted to play 5th edition that the guy actually dipped from the group. Like, he did not want to play 5th edition. He wanted to play his own system.
Okay.
And as I understand it, he has continued to make his own systems. I don't talk to him so much anymore. You know, people grow apart. It happens.
True.
But as I understand it,
we don't have to vilify him. He's a perfectly nice man. Anyway, go ahead.
But he is making his own system specifically geared towards kids now. Because he's got a daughter and a son of his own, and he would like them to learn how to play.
Oh, yeah.
To play tabletop games, and he wants to get them in early because it is his deepest passion, as far as I am aware.
Yes.
And he, like, and, like, more power to him. I get wanting to do that. I don't have kids of my own yet, but, like, you know, my wife and I have talked about adopting, and in the back of my head, it's like, yeah, and if we adopt, like a 10-year-old, I can start teaching them to be a nerd really early.
You could go, yeah, it's, you can go earlier, even.
Exactly.
It's sure.
Get them to a Ren fair and just get them hooked immediately.
Right. It's you should see Brian Posehn's son. Jimmy Pardo's son. So these are not cool kids, but they are cool in because they are accepted.
Cool to like peers and cool to the rest of my, you know, friends in my mid 30s and early 40s.
Yep.
Those are two different types of cool.
Oh, very, very much so. And there's always 100 people you can hang out with, you guys. You can just keep looking.
Oh yeah.
You can find them. They're there. So, Yeah. What? So right now, so the next one, so if it's going to start by the time this goes out, which is like we're we're doing this sort of middle of July, this will go up near the end of July, and the new season of Another Path will have started.
Yes. Yes, it will have started recording. I don't have a release date yet because things are a little hairy towards the end of this month. And then at the start of next, actually, I am going to be at Gen Con.
Right. Andy always goes to Gen Con, but for some reason, I think he decided not to go because his mom just moved in with us. So
fair enough.
And so, but he was jonesing hardcore for Gen Con, but I understand. I guess he's not going. I would like him. He should go. But because Gen Con is a delight.
Oh, it is. I am actually going to be there with a company, with Nerdburger Games. And I am going to be running a couple sessions of one of their games called Capers, which is a deck-based system. So it is like a literal deck of cards. Instead of rolling dice, you flip over a card, and that is what you roll, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is a superhero game set in the 1920s.
And it's called, what's it called?
It's called Capers. I am actually sitting right next to the book because I was working on my my campaign for that.
Okay, oh, yeah, so Capers. Out. Capers is out. I've heard of it because of the Hero Instant, I hear, and because Andy's a game designer, I hear he's got, I have very little conversation besides stand-up. He has very little conversation besides gaming. Yes. And I did do an episode with the guy who owns Gen Con or founded it or did whatever.
Oh, okay,
there's
cool.
a Dork Forest back in the archives. Knock yourself out. Excellent. Feel free.
I will have to check that out. I did, in preparation for this one, listen to your Chuck E. Cheese episode because I also worked at Chuck E. Cheese.
Did you work at Chuck E. Cheese?
It was my first job.
All right.
Out of high school, they opened up a Chuck E. Cheese. The year I graduated, I was like, I need to get in on that.
That was a pretty great episode about the history of Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
And it was a deep dive into how much she really wanted to own an animatronic guitar-wielding mouse or some damn thing. So,
they are creepy fuckers.
They really are creepy fucking images. So, okay. So you're going to run a Capers at Gen Con.
Yeah. Yes.
And that'll just be at Gen Con. One of the things I love about Gen Con is that unlike other conventions, which I also enjoy, it is the most interactive convention I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's actually doing stuff. Everyone's not standing in line to go to panels to watch other people talk about stuff. There's a little bit of that. But genuinely, I would say just 97%, if not more, I don't even know, of just people going, the first one Andy went to, he went alone and he called me. He was like, I'm surrounded by 30,000 people who also want to do what I want to do. And so if people get a chance, I'm sure it'll be quite the super spreader. So feel free to be vaccinated and wear a mask.
They are mandating masks and mandating proof of vaccination, which
well played.
I am thrilled about.
Yeah.
Genuinely.
Did you ever get COVID?
Maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
So not.
That's the thing. That and it was recently, too, which is weird. Because, I live in Ohio. It's not the best state for it anymore. We were doing all right for a while. The governor was at the forefront of doing a lot of really good lockdown stuff. And then his base got really mad at him. And so he stopped.
Yeah. Everybody. And everybody thinks it's over. And it is sadly not. But
we are waiting for endemicy at this point, which is depressing, but the reality of it, which the only silver lining of super spreader events is I guess that's going to get us to an endemic point like a month earlier.
Right.
Maybe.
Except for that, I don't want to get long COVID. I've heard that there's some fogginess and some bad brain action.
Yep.
But
yep.
I've
got a buddy with the long COVID and it's not good. I don't know if I had it or not. My wife came down with something. My wife teaches youth theater.
Okay.
She came down with something likely from one of her students.
Right,
because
she's
guessing.
Working in a petri dish. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
With a bunch of children.
She's also a youth librarian, so it's kids Oof. Out always.
Yeah,
so it was going to happen eventually.
Right.
And then she was able to chart my symptoms to the day. I was only sick for a week, but it was a solid week.
It was a solid hardcore.
But neither of us tested positive. So
interesting.
Yeah, so either we didn't have it or it was bad tests.
I had a really shitty cold that absolutely no one had any sympathy for me because I kept testing negative. And I was like, no, and they're like, well, you can still go to work. And I was like, no, when I have a terrible cold, I also don't want to go to work.
No.
And I am not irreplaceable.
Right.
Know in your heart that if I learned anything during lockdown, it's how replaceable I am. So... But yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me, tell me another tabletop gaming tale.
So I was trying to think here of what would be a good one, because that is
do you play at any games versus running them?
Sort of, kind of. We'll see. I've been in a long running game. I was in a very long running, two long running games right up until COVID hit.
Okay.
Where I was in I was in a home, like it was an extension of that original group that I was talking about where it was the homebrew system for the longest time.
Right.
And we switched over to fifth edition. That had been going, I had been playing a warlock sorcerer in that campaign for the better part of 3 or 4 years. And then lockdown hit.
Okay.
And they tried to keep the love going for probably another 6 months. We did it on Zoom.
Yeah.
It went for a long time on Zoom, but it wasn't when you are used to like being in the same room. And this is the other thing. And this is the problem with Zoom. This is why I should have led with this. That's a 10 person game.
Oh God. No, no, you can't do that on Zoom. See, Andy ran, there's two games that I'm in right now that are Hero Instant games.
Sure.
Because Andy is constantly playtesting and iterations and all these things,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So he's been doing them on Zoom. And what he's got is we have so many of those hold your phone and they bend to look at the map. So one square is just the map.
Mm-hmm.
And then the four or five of us are around, and then he's running the game, and but it's only 4 or 5 people, right. And like in Osiris Eerie, hilariously, he set a Hero Instant game in my hometown of South Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where we are essentially corporate superheroes, but we're the Great Lakes Avengers, we're essentially the C team. Yes. Of superheroes.
Very
and
cool.
It's actually an epic. It's got a great parallel. There's a parallel Earth. They're trying to immigrate to our Earth because they have destroyed their planet worse than we are. And
sure.
So the theocracy, the oligarchy would like just 5,000. There's 2 billion people left on that planet, on the parallel universe. Mm-hmm. Just 5,000 have bought like golden tickets to come over. And we're like, that doesn't seem fair. And because we're superheroes. And then the other one, we're set on the coast, essentially like Morro Bay of California, like a sort of a coastal superhero. And the character I picked for the second one, the first one, I'm essentially I'm Mrs. Kravitz. I'm called the Meddler, and I have psychic powers, and I'm in HR. So, which of course would be our greatest nightmare if HR had psychic powers. But the second one, I have a white privilege. My superpower is that I was an archaeologist, and I have, a Central American god. I opened the wrong tomb and I got the powers of a Central American god. And the people of that Central American country are angry with me. They're like,
that scans.
Hey, middle-aged white lady. Boo! And I'm like, I know. I'm so sorry. Anyway, I've digressed.
Yes.
So, but you are playing still or have they kind of waited off?
That one petered off, unfortunately. I actually had to step away from that because in the midst of COVID, I got a new job that was just asking a bit more of me mentally than I could put forth, because I was also at the same time in another campaign that is run by another good friend of mine, which she is in the process. The reason I was kind of stammering there is because she's in the process of trying to get that one kicked back off again.
Okay.
Now that she has a little bit more space and to be able to host, they just bought a home. So she would like to start hosting again in person. And then I'm also a player on another podcast called Imprinted Echoes, which uses the Cypher system.
Now, what is that? I don't even know what that is.
That is a system done by the company Monte Cook Games, The podcast uses their world of Numenera, which is set in the ninth world. So it is a billion years in the future. Civilization has fallen and risen again 8 times. This is the 9th time society has been given a go.
Okay.
So it is a really lovely blend of sci-fi and fantasy because all of the technology they have, they treat like magic because they don't know where it came from. It was from some civilization in the past. They don't know. And the reason I didn't mention that off the bat is because it ended right around the same time as Another Path. So we've also been on a recording hiatus of that. We are also gearing up to start producing that again.
Okay. So is it sort of like Ian Banks, like the science fiction world that Player of Games is in?
I'm unfamiliar with that one.
Oh, he's a science fiction writer, but it's also like a million years in the future. And
yeah,
all the AIs are sentient. And so the ships are sentient and and nobody has to work. But there's Player of Games is actually, you might enjoy that game because it's about game. It's about a world that is going to be co-opted into the culture, which is the name of the empire. But they're to be co-opted. The leader of their planet wins this game.
Okay.
And that's how they pick a new leader. And so the culture wants to send their best game player to this planet to win the game so that they can incorporate them into the empire.
Gotcha.
And it's a great introduction to the culture books, and they're all one-offs. They're Monster of the Week kind of stuff. So they're not a series in the way that other books are. You don't have to read them in order.
Gotcha.
But Ian Banks. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No worries. Imprinted Echoes. Yeah, that's been going on for about, I forget. It's either 3 or 4 years. We started not too terribly long after I started Another Path, because my friend Zan, who I mentioned earlier, who started playing with me in that group right around the same time, was like, hey, there is this system that I really, really like. It does away with some of the things that they weren't a fan of in D&D and kind of simplified some rules while still leaving a layer of complexity for people to kind of like actually build some really interesting and unique characters
off
of.
And that's the Monty Cook?
That is, yeah, Cypher System, which is produced by Monty Cook Games.
Okay, Cypher System. Thank you.
Yeah. And to a brief overview of that, if you are familiar with D&D, is instead of everything being a different type of role, everything is essentially a DC check. And what you are trying to do is use your resources to lower the number you have to hit.
Okay. And DC stands for?
Difficulty check.
There you go.
Or, yeah.
So you want to, so everything you do, you're trying to lower the number that
lower
you roll.
Lower the number that you have to hit.
That you have to hit, which is the difficulty of achieving whatever you wish to do in the game.
Correct. So if you're trying to roll, the DM is like, okay, there is a wall in front of you, and I say, I would like to climb it, they'd set the DC to be a 15. It's a high wall. It's like, okay, well, my character's an acrobat, and I've got my sword spear with me, so I'm going to go ahead and use that to launch myself up. I have this ability. It's like, okay, cool. Spend a couple of points. We're going to knock that down by 5 points. So now you only have to hit a 10.
Okay, and dice are...
Everything is like that. Usually it is a d20, unless it is damage, and then it is whatever damage die it is that you need to roll.
Fair enough. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. I like that. And where do the points come from? The points are are you given points?
That's another kind of neat thing about it.
Yeah.
You are given points. You have a base pool of points that is your mental fortitude, your physical strength, and a dexterity stand-in, essentially. And those are not only your points to spend to do these different types of actions and to use your abilities, but they're also your hit points.
Oh.
So anytime...
If you use them, do you lose... Mm-hmm. And is that permanent?
No.
Okay.
There are recovery periods.
Sure.
That's another actually kind of nice thing that they have incorporated. You take rest periods. So in D&D, you've got your short rest, your long rest. in Cypher, or at least for the Numenera Cypher, you have an instant, so an action, you can just do it, a 10 minutes, a 5 hour, and an 8 hour, I believe is the exact breakdown.
So it breaks down into many different options to get some of those points back.
Correct. And you can spend when you don't have to declare ahead of time, I'm trying to get just strength back. If you happen to roll, you know, your max on your die, which I never do, but you can. No, look, we've been joking for a while that the secret fifth member of that team is the my terrible, terrible dice rolls.
It's awful.
Roll 20 is dirty to me.
Do you have favorite dice right now? What do you?
No, I am a, I believe the clinical term is dice goblin.
Okay.
I have so many dice in very easy reach of me right now, and I don't think any of them are my primary sets because you can see I've got this little jar over here. I've got my dice lamp up there that I have made.
Yep.
I have.
Did you make that lamp?
In a manner of speaking, I found all of the translucent dice that I wasn't using, and I got a little fairy light thing from Five Below for like a couple of bucks.
Yeah.
And then put them in a used, that is a cantrip candles jar.
Okay.
After I cleaned out the jar and just shoved the fairy lights in there with the dye, and lights up pretty nice.
Lights up very nice.
And then I also have this dice pouch right here that is also filled with dice. And again, none of these are the primary dice I'm using at the moment because those are all downstairs with my in-person D&D stuff because those are the ones I'm using for that campaign.
Right. The Hero Instant has like an app that that will keep everybody's stats and all this stuff. Because Hero Instant is a time travel it involves a timeline.
Okay.
Because some people are faster, right? If you're the Flash, you're going to get there first. If you could fly, if you have to go get your car out of hock, you might miss the battle. So there's all this time stuff that happens with the Hero Instant, and I'm not a dice person. Like Andy keeps buying me dice, and I'm like, I've got a set of, and so like I have a metal set of dice that I'm not allowed to use on any wooden surface because it will ding. And I bought him a very fancy set of dice made of old growth forest because I'm a monster. They should have left it alone. They said that they're sustainable, and I was like, yeah, where are you finding a 50,000 old Irish peat moss, peat bog piece of wood, except for also in that peat bog. And plus, I think, I don't know how accurate they are. He never uses them. But I also have ones that are made out of crystals that I thought were, there's a rose quartz set and an amethyst set. But they also chip. So I don't, I've
Which
never
is why
used
I
those.
I have not gone in for those myself, even though, because I will be at Gen Con in less than a month, and I am going to stand at the crystal dice booth and be like, I have some disposable income I've set aside for this,
right?
But
and
I
they
shouldn't.
Are very pretty. They are genuinely very beautiful.
Yes.
But I can't use them because they will chip, and I can't use the metal ones because they will dent things that I'm rolling on. And I suppose I could use that dice tower, but it is weird. And so the ones I like are just sort of the cool colored ones that are, you know, sometimes they're marbled and sometimes they're translucent or sometimes I also have a giant, like battery operated D20 that blinks when you roll a 20. It doesn't blink that often. Nice. It's quite nice. Anyway.
Yeah. We've got, I've got my metal set. I've got a couple of like metal D20s, I've got two full metal sets. One of them that I have set aside for that in-person campaign that I was playing in when we ever get to play that again. Because that was actually a wedding gift from when I was in their wedding last year.
Nice.
So I like to use that for them. But I also have the metal set that I bought when I started playing that sorcerer warlock that is currently in a nice wooden case that I have, you know, I don't use those dice for any other characters. They just live in that case.
Right.
Those are Dakota's dice.
Right. Exactly. And I have this weird, Like this was a box that was given to me with some DVD swag, Avenger DVD swag, and it's got in it, like you open it up and it's got like the character sheets that I printed. Nice. This is the Meddler. Ooh. And this is Gaston Mansplain is who I is who I play when I am on Nerd Poker. That's my that's my character. And
awesome.
And this is the character I created. Because that doesn't that look like Gaston Mansplain?
Oh, absolutely.
Every time somebody else comes up with something, he also says that. And then he says, you know what I think we should do? And then he just repeats it. And it's funny until it isn't. And then guess what? It's funny again.
Look, it comes back around. It's like Pac-Man just comes back around.
Exactly. So I'm sorry while I drop things.
No,
hey,
it's okay.
Who's watching it on YouTube? Anyone? It's exciting. Hi.
Hi.
Okay.
Incredible.
So what would you recommend for, like, you want people, obviously, like, they can go back and they can listen to 100 hours of another path.
If you've got a road trip, or a very long commute, I have been told by multiple people I am an incredible commute partner.
Oh, there you go. And it's fun. It's fun to listen to people.
So there is a actually here in Bowling Green, Ohio. There is a small brewing company called Ice Tier Brewing. I have been drinking out of their pint glass this entire time to hydrate. We actually partner with them to brew about once a year or so. I think we did twice last year. I'll also throw out on here, we are partnering with them again to, around the same time that the next season of AP launches, we are going to be launching a new beer with them.
Okay.
It is going to be a sandalwood and juniper berry ale.
Wow.
Very excited. But he started, I noticed that they were building the bar because they put their sign has a massive D20 on it. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. Those are nerds. I'm going to go see what the nerd bar is about.
Yeah, and just so the nerd bar drink. What kind of beer do you people enjoy?
So I found the guy on Facebook. I was like, hey, I run a podcast locally. I'd love to like meet up with you to try and collaborate sometime. And Chris, who is the owner, invited me in and we chatted for a little bit while they were in the process of building the bar. And then a couple of months went by, I didn't hear from him. And then out of nowhere, he messaged me. He's like, hey, I don't know if you know this. I actually have like a 2-hour drive to get to the bar. So I've been listening to you guys and I love it. And so that's how I found that.
That's how you get fans.
Exactly. Just by locking them in a car with me.
Right.
But me also not being there. It's very important that I'm not actually there.
Right.
I can't look back. I have not gone back to listen to the old episodes in quite some time. But I have been told again that they hold up.
Okay, that's good. And do you do the editing yourself?
I do.
Wow, that is gutsy stuff. People should know there's absolutely no editing of the Dork Forest. Patrick Brady, who does the audio, he cleans it up. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for a nice wave. We're looking for the intro, the outro. And then I like him to clip out a nice teaser clip in the middle so that we can all at least get an idea of how fun the show's going to be. Correct. So,
That was my methodology. So another show on the network that is currently on hiatus is called Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. It is a round table about the classics, but originally it was a round table about going through all of the works of Shakespeare, which we did. Everything except the sonnets and potentially unsubstantiated works.
So you did not go through the sonnets, which there are hundreds of, I'm told.
Exactly, which is part of the reason why we didn't. There's a lot of sonnets, and there's only so much meat on those bones.
Yeah.
But we did every Shakespeare. We did King John.
Mm-hmm.
We did Troilus and Cressida.
Wow, that's a lot of B-sides.
It's a lot of B-sides. And you know what? Some of the B-sides are pretty good.
That's cool, though.
Timon of Athens? Surprisingly relevant today.
You know, interesting to me, because it's one way to get yourself to know about these things. I don't know if you've ever, Tolkien professor, I don't know if you've ever listened to him. It's a guy who used to teach Tolkien at a university, and now he has a tiny Tolkien empire of mythos and enjoying the movies and such, but the best series that and he's been on the Dork Forest a couple of times, and he's great.
Okay.
But he is my favorite series that he did was he broke down the Silmarillion. And you want someone to break down the Silmarillion because it's essentially the Old Testament. So I would like someone to explain Genesis to me and a lot of begats. And he does a nice work with begats and he does really good Iluvatar. And so I would recommend that too. But if the people go to Ghost Light Media,
ghostlightmedia.net.
.net. They will, there are options that they can listen to if they enjoy tabletop gaming and sort of listening along to the, and the good thing is at least two of them are not open-ended. They are finite and you can hear how it ends, which is always, always fun.
Yes. On that, we also do have, if you want something that's a bit more open-ended, my other recommendation would be on the network is The Silent Secrets, which is a Monster Hearts actual play podcast.
Okay. Oh,
and Monster Hearts is what if you took your favorite CW supernatural drama, like a Supernatural or a Riverdale, and you made that a tabletop role-playing game. So you are really on the face of it. You are horny high school kids, and you also have, like, you're also a vampire or a witch.
Sure.
Or a zombie, and you are trying to hide it from everyone around you.
There's some fan fiction.
But there is also high drama going on. Exactly. Yeah. You're writing, I mean, that is literally just writing the fan fiction of your own game as you are playing it. There are, and it is expressly, like, this is like, high sexual content. It is.
Know in your hearts.
Exactly. It is a very, like, you got to have at the beginning of that game specifically, and I actually encourage this for all of them. I do this with my players as well. At the beginning, before you start playing, have a content talk with your players.
Oh, there you
have
go.
Have a content talk. Like, actually say, it's like, hey, do you have any, like, you know, and maybe
what's going to trigger you? Because I don't want to. Let's not.
As someone who has accidentally triggered somebody at the table before, it feels bad.
Right. You feel like really a real jackass. And
it wasn't even something.
You're not doing it on purpose. Literally, I heard a story today about a stand-up comic last night who lost. We're not going to name his name, so we're just going to say he's an okay comic, but he's not a genius, right?
Sure.
So the dude's just, and he was not having a good set, so he starts talking to this woman in the front row, and he has to repeat everything she's saying because it's a pretty big crowd.
Sure.
And in the course of it, we learn that he is literally eviscerating this woman who is in a wheelchair, and he says something so ridiculous that he makes her cry. And you're like, dude, stop talking.
Stop talking.
Right. You weren't doing that. You were just you're in a world which has a lot of teen sexy sex.
Yes.
Like it's sexy teens. That's all of those shows are. That's what Buffy the Vampire Slayer was.
Yes.
That is some hot teen vamp. And so there's nothing. And you're not trying to light somebody up. But if you do that thing.
Yes. No. And honestly, and here's the thing. The one time it wasn't even something I wrote. It was the one time I tried to run a campaign. I finished the book. I ran Rime of the Frostmaiden, which is one of the more recent D&D supplements. And I ran the way through it. And one of my players, like there was an instance where the players are in caves and they're driving you mad and you're having these hallucinations and you roll on a chart to see what kind of hallucination you get. And I accidentally described a hallucination they really had one time. So that wasn't good.
Right. Well,
and how could I know? And
they
didn't even know that was going to trigger them.
Right.
But all it is like making, you know, doing your due diligence to make sure that you are providing a fun environment for people to hang out in.
Yes.
And that's.
Yes. And that's true of any. Yeah.
Right. My ethos when it comes to playing these games is like, it is at the beginning and end of the day, the only people that I am trying to please are my players.
Yes.
If people enjoy what I put out there at the end of the day, great.
That's a win.
Love
that's a
that.
Win. It's, yeah.
We're calling it a win across the board. But as long as my players have fun, I've run a good game.
Yes.
And that's what I care about. I also would be remiss if I didn't say that The Silent Secrets, that Monster Hearts actual play podcast that I mentioned, is run by Zach, who is one of my former players on Another Path. We are actually swapping. He is stepping down from that from Another Path so he can focus more on that. We have a new friend joining us. His name is Justin. He is going to be joining us from the Twin Cities, but will be taking the seat in Another Path. So we're going to be having a slight cast change up there as well. And the new season of Another Path is also going to have no immediate connections to the prior campaign.
Okay.
So if somebody is interested in joining, is like, I don't want to be the guy who has to like
has to play
learn about
up.
All the yeah. lore and play catch up on 100. It's like, no hard cut on this one.
No sweat. And I think that's the week I'm at Acme in Minneapolis. So this, this, I think, or I will have just been there. Feel free to check JackieCation.com. I might be in Denver.
Yeah. And so, I actually believe he is going to be in a production of Something Rotten. He is playing Nostradamus in that around that time as well.
In Minneapolis.
In Minneapolis, yes.
I have many Minneapolis. So where is he playing in where's Nostradamus?
That I don't know. It's
Google
in
the words
Something
theater,
Rotten.
Minneapolis. And, okay. And Nostradamus, not you. I'm talking to Rangers.
Well, now
Rangers.
I'm curious.
Now you're curious. It might be that that dinner theater out in the Boones, which is super fun.
Ooh, who hasn't love a dinner theater?
Yeah. Who hasn't seen Soap Dish? Come on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I will also say before we leave is that you have both DM'd, dungeon mastered,
yes.
game mastered many games,
yes.
and you've also played in many games, and. Mm-hmm. It is always a different game when mm-hmm. you go with a different game master, you know, like everybody has a different, what they want to get out of the game. And what you want to mm-hmm. get is that your players have a good time. My friend Eric mm-hmm. was GMing this, I think it was a fifth edition, but he was using one of the pre-written modulars or whatever.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And for fifth edition. And we were playing, and I was like, he is genuinely trying to kill us. Why is he trying to kill us so hard? And I would die. And it took like the second or third time when I died to realize that he would kill me. And then he would say, do you have any of those points? And me and the 15-year-old would both fall mm-hmm. for it like three times where we would get mad that we had been killed. Mm-hmm. And then he would get to say, do you have any of those points? Oh, you're back alive. You're back alive, it turns out. And it's just something that as a GM, he likes to kill the characters and
sure.
have that tension. But he doesn't really want to kill the characters because you spent time creating a character.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Like that is the ethos that I go with is like I go into every one of my games being a fan of all of the characters. I want to see them succeed. I want to see them struggle.
Yeah.
I want to see them hurt a little bit. It's not fun. If there's not some kind of tension, that's what stories are.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, it's you want to have fun. Mm-hmm. You want to see stuff in a new light. You want to see the players and the characters go up against new and interesting challenges, whether that is a combat encounter or honestly, if you're me, it's social encounters are often just as dangerous.
There you go.
One of the most dangerous moments that my players ever had was in the middle of season three? Did they get to season three before they met him? Yes, they did. It's all running together now. But no, there was a point where they met an incredibly powerful, wizard who had been built up over the course of a year in real time where they had not met this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they meet in the ruins of a burned out warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, if they had taken the wrong step, this guy would have wiped the floor with them.
Yeah.
It would have been terrible.
There you go.
But that's the thing is like the danger doesn't and the tension doesn't always have to come from the threat of death. It could
right.
just be the threat of pain.
Right, right.
The threat of threats.
Yes. And that is kind of the cool thing about tabletop gaming is you get to role play that and you get mm-hmm. to role play all the things that you've ever kind of wanted to try. And it's a safe space. So find mm-hmm. yourself a safe and happy game master. Chase, you've done vital work here. We're at a little over an hour. Good for us. Yeah. And but Chase is he's the guru of ghostlightmedia.net, yes. I believe.
Yes. Ghostlightmedia.net for
network. And the host of Another Path. And there are several awesome podcasts if you like to listen to gaming and Shakespeare talk and all kinds of things. But go look at ghostlightmedia.com and .net and if you want new pods. So thank you so much for doing the show, Chase.
Happy to do it. Thank you for having me.
And you can go to TQ Loudly, at TQ Loudly, and all the things to see all the things.
Yes.
And good for you. And I say this, like I always say, Rangers, take care of each other. You know the rules out there.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?